right, welcome back to Hash It Up. Today I have Cody Nelson on the show, COO and co-founder of Revolve Labs. For a long time, Cody, I've been wanting to have somebody on the show that can talk to me about repairs and what it means to repair ASICs to keep them running. Hash Rate Up, hardware sales, advisory, hosting, and site brokerage. Find new and used ASIC deals through the website and the Telegram channel below. Make smarter decisions with Hash Rate Up. We are recording at 920147, if my eyes don't deceive me. And we are at 4826 hash price. And the previous adjustment was a -2.73. The next estimated difficulty adjustment is going to be a whopping 6.5%, pushing miners further into purgatory and economic pain. And I have to eat my words here. I was like all about, you know, if we had one zeta hash, you know, we're not going to see the same amount of growth and all of that good stuff. 7 days later, 100 exahash have been added to the network. I'm like, wow. This is insane. Are you repairing all of these to put them back online, Cody? Where's that hash rate coming from, you think?
Yeah, it's not coming from us. That's a lot of repairs.
Oh, man. Yeah, crazy. Okay, right. So repairs. Before we get started, Cody, just introduce Revolve Labs briefly and how you guys got started. And then, we'll make this a fun show.
That's awesome. Thank you again for having me on, Jesse. Appreciate the time. So Revolve Labs, we've been around for, 6 or 7 years now. I said 6 or 7. Sorry, that's all lingo nowadays for my kids. They love 6, 7 for whatever reason. But we've been around for 6 or 7 years now. We started out just building ASIC rigs, ASIC altcoin rigs. We pivoted into hosting ASIC miners and building our own data centers. And now we have our own data center that we maintain and we host for people. And we're currently expanding our current data center and building another data center. So it's exciting times for us to keep just growing and expanding as people need it.
What's the cash cow, I would say, in your business? Is it hosting, repairs? What is it that you guys do most revenue with?
Oh, it's not repairs. So this is something people think that we just make, you know, money hand over fist doing repairs. And it's actually very hard, if not impossible, to have a profitable repair side of your business. And in fact, most industries, the repair side of the business is either a loss leader or just, you know, always a red mark on your bottom line. So, you know, we do it as a value add to our customers. And we've seen a lot of repair centers go under over the last year, especially because it is so hard to continue to compete and offer these services to people at a reasonable cost. But we've stayed in the business because we mostly do it for our customers and those that we, you know, that know and trust us a lot.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so let's talk repairs. To get us started, right, what's the number one mistake miners make that ends up costing them a lot of money that they could have avoided paying?
I would probably say number one would be not filtering their intake air because your miners end up just getting caked full of stuff and then they overheat and break. And number two is akin to it, and that's that they run them either too hot or have it in an environment where it fluctuates temperature too widely, right? Where it goes from being, you know, 32 degrees Fahrenheit in the morning up to 80 degrees Fahrenheit in the afternoon. You know, having wild swings like that tend to break hardware pretty easily.
Okay. Is that also what you notice first? Like caked up fans and dusty machines. What does that tell you when you see it?
Oh yeah, we can easily tell if your facility has air filtration or not based off of just looking at the miner from the exterior. When we see it on the interior, it tells us a little bit more about what's actually going inside.
All right, so
we've seen it all. We've seen everything from dragonflies to, you know, ladybugs, even you know, bird feathers. We've seen everything inside of ASICs.
Oh, you would love that story that Eric from Gridless has to tell. I'm going to tell it to you quickly, right? I don't know if you've heard this before, but they're mining in Kenya, right? Containerized setups. Power Mining is one of their suppliers, which was the previous episode. And so one night somebody left open the container door, right? And left the light on. And so Kenya, you can imagine like the bugs were blocking out the light, right? So, and the next morning they were sitting there with toothbrushes cleaning ashboards from guts, right? But, and we know we're going to talk about this as well. So it's a good lead up to further questions. But that is why they are now hardcore MicroBT maxis, is because, you know, they all got a notification on the phone in the evenings, like, you know, efficiency dropped or hash rate dropped or whatever. Because all of these machines were not turning off, right? But they had bug guts all over them and inside and everywhere. And they did not turn off, right? They continued hashing. So yeah, that's, I don't know if you've ever cleaned bug guts out of machines, but I know they have.
Oh yeah. And it's also very evident once you open the machines, what type of environment they're in. You know, we've gotten machines that were in Florida and it looked like these machines were dumped in the ocean and then run because the corrosion due to the salt water was just incredible. And we ended up doing a lot of repairs, temperature sensor repairs on those miners because it had just corroded the front edge of the board so badly.
That's crazy. Okay, so would you say most ASICs fail because of the operators failing to run them properly or because they are of a bad build quality because we are still in a very nascent industry?
I'd say it's both. You know, we tend to see a lot of Bitmain machines in because A, they are the number one machine out there. Most of them exist. But B, because they tend to be poor quality. Unfortunately, Bitmain machines just fail more than others. And so we get a lot of them in our repair center.
Which Bitmain model performs best? Because my, you know, all with all respect to Bitmain, where it's due, my S21 Pro has been running very well. I cannot complain, but I could have just gotten very lucky.
I will say when they transitioned from having a 7-layer PCB to, you know, a single layer with a aluminum substrate, that transition made it very failure prone. And when the failures happened, they tend to be catastrophic. They'll short to ground, they'll short to the substrate, and then you can't fix it at that point. Or they'll just overheat and blow up, which I'm sure you've seen some of those happen too.
But videos.
The older gen ones, like your S19, you know, vanilla, your S19J Pro, your S19 Pro, those ones were workhorses. Those things are still just banging out. And when they fail, it's something simple like, okay, you replace one component or one chip. Whereas, you know, when they went to S19 XP with a single layer substrate, then they tended to, like, a whole domain would go out. So you'd lose 10 or 11 chips. And that's just not economical to repair at that point. I'm kind of disappointed in where Bitmain has gone. Maybe they've improved with the S21 Plus or Pros, and it's gotten better. But yeah, we saw a big decrease in the repairability of machines when they went to that new design.
Okay, so lots of questions there. Have you had, how many S21 Pros do you see, like percentage-wise, in your shop, would you say? Can you give a rough estimate?
Because they're still relatively new, we haven't had a ton of them. Maybe a dozen come through our repair shop.
Okay, I mean that
of the S21,
That
we see a lot of the S21s. We see a lot of the S21s are coming through our shop, but still some of the S21 pluses and pros we're starting to see trickle through now.
And the S21s that you see, do they have the same cannot be repaired short to ground aluminium substrate issue that the S19 XPs had?
Yes.
And why would they do that? What's the rationale behind it?
That's a great question and one that I'm not privy to, but you know, if you have an ear inside of Bitmain that you could ask their designers, their engineers, why they did it that way. You know, WhatsMiner has been doing that for years. MicroBT has the single layer substrate, but we didn't see near the amount of failures with WhatsMiners that we do with Bitmain's single layer substrate. Okay. So they're doing something different.
We have to zoom out one bit. Can you just explain the difference? You just said seven layer PCB, which I have a fundamental understanding of what that means, and the aluminium backplate. Can you explain the difference and why that matters?
Sure. Yeah, so a seven, so typically printed circuit boards are made with different layers of circuit board. And what's the advantage of it is that you can go through what's called vias. You can go from one layer to a different layer down a hole, so to speak. And then you can traverse that layer and pop up somewhere else on another part of the board. You don't have to have a trace on the top of the board that goes continuously from one place to another. So it makes it, it makes you as an engineer engineering this board able to be a lot more sophisticated and a lot more condensed with your circuitry when you build that board. When you do the single layer substrate, it's one layer of PCB and then it's an aluminum backing. Now, my understanding is the reason they went for that is it's a lot easier to evacuate heat from that circuit board layer when you have just a big pancake of aluminum that then is hooked into a heat sink, and so you can pull the heat off of it. Whereas a seven layer PCB, it's harder to evacuate the heat out of those seven layers and into a heat sink. Does that make sense?
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order.
It does make sense. I just know there will be some people scratching their heads talking about seven layer. This is why I do these hash rate up focus episodes, you know, to give people a bit more fodder knowledge wise when it comes to these discussions, because then somebody who's like, just as I am deeply in the trenches, you know, talking about seven layer PCBs on a hashboard and people are lost, you know, normally. So that's why it's good to detangle that a little bit. Okay, so we don't know why they do it. There has to be some economic reason, but I've heard that as well, like high failure rates and everybody looking for I think there were two versions of the S19 XP, if I'm not mistaken, some with aluminum hashboards, and then there was a version with hashboards that had a different backing that everybody was after, because they knew, and this is another thing, during shipping the aluminium would stretch and pull, and that would also cause very high failure rates, I remember, on these machines. Yeah. So that's why everybody was after the other ones.
So I would say it's less about the shipping and more the temperature differential, right? So the printed circuit board is going to expand and contract at a different rate than your aluminum substrate is. And so what you end up with is a Boeing situation where it tends to put stress on the circuits, the circuit board layer, because the aluminum and the circuit board are not expanding, contracting at the same rate. And we see that also when we go to do repairs on machines, we have to add a lot of heat because that aluminum evacuates the heat that you're putting on the board to get components off so quickly. You have to heat a large area and very quickly and high temperature. And so you can only heat up a board so many times over and over and over again before that board becomes so warped, it will no longer function properly. And so that's what also adds to the difficulty of repairing these aluminum substrate boards.
Very interesting. Yeah, one day I'll have to come and visit your facility and just explain to people what each station does. You probably also have these heat plates, right, that you put hashboards on to heat them up before you remove the ASICs and all that. Super cool. I would love to see that one day. Okay, anyway, so this leads me to the next thing. What are sort of the most common failures that you see today? Is it fan failures that are probably just replaced? Are chips failing? What do you see increasingly currently?
Yeah, so if you're looking machine level, I would say most common is you lose a fan. A fan, you know, fails for whatever reason. Next most common is a PSU failure. And then I would say next most common is hashboard failures. And when hashboard failures happen, it varies widely based off of the model. So I'll give you an example. The S19 95 terahash, you know, the plain vanilla one, those tended to be most commonly chip failures. And then usually right up there with it would be an LDO that would go out.
What is an LDO? LDO is just, excuse me, sorry, what is an LDO?
Yeah. LDO is short for low dropout. And it's basically a voltage regulator. It takes power in and it brings down that voltage to a different voltage, right? So in our case, it usually takes something like 5 volts and brings it down to 1.8 volts. And 1.8 volts is what powers the signals through the board, through the hash board.
Okay. Understood. Okay, so next up, lead me through kind of the pricing for this. So is it worth repairing PSUs or do you just really buy a new one? Because repairing it mostly is more expensive labor-wise in America than buying a new one. What does that look like?
That's a great question. And we get a lot of, so we actually, I created a certification, an ASIC repair training certification course to train people on doing hashboard repairs. And we get this request a lot. Do you guys train on PSU repairs? And, you know, I started into creating a certification, an advanced certification for PSUs, and then quickly realized it's actually pretty dangerous to do repairs on PSUs. You're talking about very high amperage and voltage, and it can be very dangerous trying to repair them. And especially someone that is not very knowledgeable or experienced in doing electronics repair. And so most of the people we see in our certification course are beginners. Some of them haven't ever even soldered a component on a PCB before. And so we take them from very beginner level to I can now diagnose and repair a hash board. They're not ready to be touching PSUs. So I would say, yes, it's possible to repair PSUs, but in the US, it's not really economical to do so, and it's very dangerous.
Okay, so give me an idea, what's the price for a new PSU? If I had to buy one now, because my S21, because now that I said it's running so nicely, it's going to break tomorrow, PSU failure, what do I have to spend to get a new one?
That's a great question. I think S21 PSUs are like $175 to $200, something like that.
Oh, wow.
Okay. The newer ones, you know, your S21 Pros and Pluses might even be upwards of $200 to $300.
Okay. So to recap this, it's basically a little bit more or 1 month of hosting in the US to buy a new PSU. So it adds an extra month to my hosting bill. And repairing it, not really worth the risk then either, right? Because it's when something goes wrong, it's not a very good outcome for anybody's health. So it's not worth the risk or the money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
What about?
And, you know, this is actually, I'm going to take a second to shill our product because because we saw this happening, we saw people getting into this mindset that ASICs are just expendable and they're not worth repairing. We created the first fully underwritten ASIC warranty program where people can have more assurance that they're actually going to see a return on investment on their miner by getting a warranty. And the warranty basically, if anything goes wrong with that machine, we will either repair or replace it. And that's included in part of the warranty cost. And, you know, we've been working hard to try to change the mindset of people to think of these more like assets and not like something that's just expendable. And when it breaks, you get rid of it or you just throw a new PSU on it.
Yeah, because that's perfect. And feel free to shill anything you have. I mean, that's what you're here for, partly, not just to ask my questions. But I mean, it also speaks to sort of the strategy around having a funnel for these ASICs, right? You buy new machines, M60S Plus or whatever, and deploy it in a low risk, medium cost, high cost environment. And then once it's sort of done its job or is almost at ROI, now you want to use it elsewhere, right? Now you want to use it on maybe cheap gas that you have. So you have that funnel from high cost, lower, higher risk and everything. And what you just said, I mean, just it expands the lifetime of the machine. And as the asset, it makes that a viable strategy. So what would you say is sort of the typical physical lifespan of a machine? Would you say it's 2 years, 4 years, 8 years? Can you say?
I actually think I think you're starting to see a longer and longer life cycle of ASICs. You know, the S9 was kind of a rock star. That thing lasted forever, it seemed. And only, you know, maybe what, 2 years ago became kind of irrelevant, but they were still running S9s for a long time. do you have one back there? But yes. And in fact, when I went to Shenzhen and I actually went through Bitmain's repair certification course, I learned on S9s. So I've seen the progress from S9, S11, S15, S17, S19 to now S21. And I feel like the S19J Pros, you know, those to me are relevant 3 to 6 years, something like that. So I think that's probably a good estimate of how long they should be viable for. But, you know, there's some manufacturers that are making some moves in the industry to try to make these things even last longer and be, you know, with swappable hashboards, for example, where, you know, you take the latest hashboard and you chuck it in there and now you're running with the latest and greatest instead of trashing the whole machine. Right.
Yeah. What I mean, we can name it. What's your thoughts on the ProtoMiner? 30 seconds, high level, Cody's thoughts.
I think it's a great idea. And I'd really like to see him succeed because I hate the waste that's in this industry that, you know, it's like burn it, you know, you run it until the wheels fall off and then you chuck it in the landfill. And that's not a great way to go about things. So I really like to see that gain some traction. I'd love to see the other manufacturers, Bitmain, you know, MicroBT, jump on board with a similar type of concept too.
I have a take that in sort of 5 years, just like we don't see any smartphone without a camera, we're not going to see any ASICs without hot swappable fans anymore.
That would be fantastic. So
it's so such low hanging fruit, you know, to grab for ASIC design. What does the just to go back to the ASIC warranty, what does that cost me? So if I wanted to sign up for that, what do I have to pay a month for that warranty?
That's a great question. It depends on the model. So, you know, I can't give you, you know, an exact number, but, and it also depends on whether you want to go the deductible route or the non-deductible route. But, you know, it should cost you somewhere in the realm of, you know, $50 to $100 a year to insure your miner, which, you know, you're going to spend, if your PSU fails, what are you going to spend? $300? Okay, well, that's going to pay for itself really fast if you have a PSU failure and it's insured or it's warrantied by ASIC Assure.
It's peace of mind too.
Oh, 100%. And one other thing that we are working on integrating is actually a hash rate protection program where if your miner fails while it's under warranty, we will actually send you hash rate while it's in transit being repaired and in transit back to you. So you actually keep your mined earnings throughout that whole period of time. And again, it speaks to the ability for you to, you know, everywhere from, you know, your institutional miner down to your mining in your garage, making sure that they can all obtain a return on investment.
You just want a customer. Okay, so let's crack on here. Prices for refurbishment and basic repair. You want to refurbish a miner? What does that cost me? And then I want to talk, because this happens also frequently, just give me the same for the PSU, give me the same for hashboards. Like, is that worth repairing or not? When does it not make sense? And what are the what are the prices?
Great question. So hashboards typically are going to run you somewhere between $100 and $200 to repair, depending on the complexity and the model that you're repairing. PSUs, control boards, typically those are swapped out with new ones. They don't fail all that often. But again, the replacement cost of a new PSU is like $200 to $300. Some of the older ones are like in the 100 range, 80 to 120, something like that. Control boards typically are going to run you $30 to $60 for a replacement there. And then fans, you know, those are usually like $5 to $10. Those are pretty inexpensive.
You know the BitX, the open source miner that everybody is talking about? At solomining.de, you will find the BitX, an absolute top quality built made in Germany. Prefer a color display? That's the NerdX. If you want the real power, the NerdQX++ with 4 chips is the one for you. All devices ship worldwide, ready to plug and play. Visit solomining.de to get started mining now. So, hold on. You buy a machine for, let's say, $3,500, S21 Pro again. The chassis, okay, maybe $50. The PSU, you said, is about $250 maybe. That's $300. You said hashboards is how much?
To repair or get a new one?
To get a new one.
Depends on the model, but yeah, you're looking at like probably about $500 to $800 a piece.
Okay, wow. Okay, I mean, then yeah, it's sort of with the margin of the seller, we'll probably get to that mark. Okay, interesting. Let's move on to firmware, Cody. What are your thoughts around third-party firmware? Does it break things? What firmware are you a fan of? Do you use it? Do you not use it? Do you, like, I know you do hosting as well, you said. So is that something you tell your customers to do or to stay away from?
Great question. So I'll give you a little history here. In the beginning, when we started hosting, we actually did use some third-party firmware and allow our customers to use third-party firmware. And it ended up breaking miners in mass, and customers had a horrible experience. And so we said no more, and we went to OEM only. We weren't allowing anyone to use any third-party firmware. I think it's come a long way now. You know, you've got Vanish, you've got Lux, you've got NiceHash. What is Brains. The other one I'm blanking on? Brains. Thank you. And they've all made huge strides in that area to make them better than OEM. And I think they are definitely more capable than OEM software. And in a lot of cases, I think they do make the miner last longer if you aren't overclocking them. You can easily just overclock them all the way to full and it will decrease the lifespan of your machine. But if you're smart about what you're doing with the settings on your machine using third-party firmware, then I think it can actually extend the lifespan of your machine.
So the Bitcoin on me trying to get all the value possible. So if I sign for your warranty, sign up for that, right? And then I just crank my miner to run full speed all the time. Might that be a worthwhile investment?
So yeah, we do. So we actually do have something in our warranty that allows you to either use third-party firmware or not use third-party firmware. And your pricing will adjust accordingly. So you want to run it that high, that's fine. You're just going to pay a lot more in premiums and deductibles because you are pushing the envelope and it increases the failure rate.
I'm trying to be smart, but you're one step ahead of me. Okay, fair enough. Okay, cool. So then another thing, I mean, we talk about maintenance and repairs. That's when something breaks, right? In other industries, we have regular maintenance, predictive maintenance, making sure we catch errors before they actually, you know, burn the miner down to ashes. Like, do you see this happening in the industry? Predictive maintenance to become a thing, or are we really just focusing on working on the machines once they're not hashing anymore?
Sure. So let's talk about preventative maintenance first. I would say the real only preventative maintenance you can do is cleaning your miner regularly and filtering your air intake. If you do those two things, that's pretty much the only preventative maintenance, that and like swapping out fans when they go bad, that kind of thing that you can do. Now, I have heard talk of, you know, these third-party firmwares actually getting into the predictive maintenance category, where theoretically you see, you know, oscillation in the output of a chip, to then just downclock that chip, that one chip, to maybe hopefully get it to last longer and not fail. That's theoretically possible. And I think some of those third-party firmwares are either starting to do that or have just started doing that, which is great. And that should be the case. But there are also some manufacturers like Auradine, for example, Auradine's Terraflux machines, they have engineered them in such a way to be fault tolerant. So you can actually have an ASIC, multiple ASICs fail on a hashboard, and that hashboard continue to hash as if there wasn't a failure at all, which is fantastic. And that's how it should be, should have been from the beginning. And Bitmain actually kind of did this in the beginning, where they allowed each hashboard to function independent of the others, but went away from that. And now if one hashboard fails, your whole miner shuts down. You don't get any output. So I really love what Auradine's doing there, and I think they've created a fantastic product. And so I'm shamelessly shilling them, because I do want to see the industry get better. I want to see these manufacturers put out better quality products and not just keep doing the same status quo that they've been doing for the last several years.
Yeah, Auradine has been a guest on the show for two times already. Sanjay always is great to talk to. Super great to listen to as well, because very knowledgeable, very sort of thinks through everything that he says. I feel like in the 5 seconds that he has to think about the question. And that's always fun to see. Have you had any Auradine machine in your shop?
You know, I think this is a testament to how reliable those machines are. The answer is no. So, you know, they do a fantastic job of engineering these things to just last and to be a quality product. And so I think we've actually seen one technically in our shop, but yeah.
All right.
Love what they're doing.
Amazing. And then that one machine, did that get a taste of your repair tracker, or the customer of it? I want to talk to you about the repair tracking that you guys do internally and why you do it.
Great question. So yeah, we mostly built this, we call it the Repair Center application, RC app for short. We created it to just track our own internal operations. For years, we were just putting the information on a Google spreadsheet. And, you know, sometimes we'd share that with the customer so they could see what was going on. And when we started sharing the Google spreadsheet, they're like, this is great. We get a level of transparency we don't get with any other repair shop. And so we're like, great. Let's make an official app out of it. So we actually had our software developers, you know, I put in the initial design, and then we had them create it. And then we built it in such a way that we could actually add the customers in, so they had a portal into the RC app, and they could see exactly what machines we had. They can see the logistics, you know, the tracking numbers, when it left, when it came. They can see the diagnostics, you know, which parts failed on what machines. They can see what we did about it, all the repairs, all the replacements. We even have a parts inventory list. So if your miner experiences failures and we swap a part out, that broken part goes into your parts inventory, and you can keep it, you can ship it, you can have us e-waste it. Or if you end up with a machine that can't be repaired, the good parts of that can actually be put in inventory and used on future repairs. And then, of course, a billing section, so that you can see line by line, here's the machine serial number, this is what we did to it, and this is what it cost. And you get all of that very transparently. We even recently integrated a messaging system. So you log into the app and you can say, hey, what's the status on my repair? What's going on with this? And we can, and our techs can respond directly to you inside of the app.
Okay, I was going to say AI is even present here, but it's actually a person answering.
It is a person, yep.
Amazing. for now.
We'll see. I
at some point, yeah, you won't if be able AI, to tell.
Maybe if AI gets better, but you know, I'm so frustrated when I go onto like some websites and use their AI chatbot. I'm like, can I just talk to a person? This is
insane. Yeah. Agent. Yes, no.
Agent.
Okay, cool, Cody. We have been chatting. Time has just flown past. I want to end on a few rapid fire questions and then give you a chance to tell people where to find Revolve Labs, and then we close out there. Cool?
Great.
All right. Rapid fire. Here we go. What's your favorite ASIC model to work on and why?
S19J Pro, hands down, because most of the time it's a chip, LDO or temp sensor, and we can fix those super fast. I could totally get into you. We actually did a whole, sorry, this is rapid fire, but maybe for another chat, we can talk about how we actually made a temp sensor fix that allows us to fix temp sensors that are corroded off the board within a minute.
My editors will make sure this is a rapid fire after the fact.
Okay.
Thank you, Ben.
Yeah.
Which machine gives you the biggest headaches when it hits your bench? What machine are you like, oh no, please send it back?
The KA3, the S21s, yeah, those are pretty bad.
Okay. What's the fastest repair you've ever completed? I think you already answered this.
Yep. J Pro temp sensor. You know, I got down to the point where I could fix those in less than a minute.
Wow. Okay. If every miner followed one rule to avoid repairs, what would it be?
Clean your machines. Yeah. Regular cleanings.
All right. Cody, tell people where to find Revolve Labs.
Great question. We are in Colorado Springs, and we have a 10,000 square foot facility where we do all sorts of repairs on all sorts of different models, makes, and we've been doing it for several years now, I think 3 or 4 years. So yeah, reach out to us. You can come to our website, revolvelabs.ai, and you can request anything from hosting to repairs.
Guys, this was Cody from Revolve Labs, COO and co-founder. Thank you so much for your time, Cody. I learned a lot. I really hope the listeners did as well. Guys, leave a like, leave a subscription, all that good stuff. You know how that works. I don't have to tell you over and over again, but I will. And until next time, cheers. Bye.